I'd like to call the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee to order for Thursday, March 14th. Thank you, members, for being here this morning. We have four bills on our agenda. I know that members are busy, obviously, with only one more day till the first deadline, so they'll be coming and going. But we'd like to start with Senate File 1291. It's a Senator Tomasoni bill, but I believe Senator Saxhog is going to pinch hit today. So, Senator Saxhog, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you stated, we're presenting today Senate File 1291. I'm doing that on behalf of Senator Tomasoni, who's got an emergency. And so we appreciate you letting us, let co-authors take care of this, Mr. Chairman. Do we have the A1 and A2 amendments that members should already have? It needs to be passed out.
And members, too, just let the record state a quorum is present. This is the A1 author's amendment, Senator Saxhog, to put the bill in the shape that you'd like, and A2?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Schmidt moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Then we also have the A2 amendment that you'd like to add to the bill. Is that correct, Senator Saxhog?
That's great. Okay. Thank you,
Senator Schmidt then would also move the A2 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill will update outdated language from a 1905 statute concerning mine inspections. The bill will affect St. Louis and Itasca counties. With me today is Joe Austin, St. Louis County Safety Director, to give brief testimony and answer any questions the committee may have.
Mr. Austin, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Joe Austin. I'm the Director of Safety and Risk Management in St. Louis County, and I'm the acting mine inspector. The bill before you represents the product of considerable work by impacted stakeholders, about 4 months' worth of meetings with mine employees, mine safety committees, mine management, and our mine inspectors. It's been considerable back and forth. And I believe we're putting forward a good product. We're proposing to revise a law that was originally put in place in 1905 and establish the requirement for any county with five or more mines in operation to have a mine inspector's office. As the senator said, this will only actually impact two counties, Itasca, which contracts with St. Louis County, and St. Louis County, who actually has a mine inspector's office. The proposed changes do not impact the four primary responsibilities of the mine inspector's office, which are inspecting area mines every 90 days, investigating serious accidents and fatalities, safeguarding the public via fencing of abandoned properties, and communicating with our stakeholders via our annual report. Basically, we're proposing to revise MS-180 to remove archaic language and reflect our current practices, which are working and are well supported by all of our stakeholders. I'm welcome, or would like to answer any questions if you wish.
Members, do you have any questions for Mr. Austin or Senator Saxhog?
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Senator Deems.
Just a comment for Senator Saxhog. I understand that you have accomplished peace in the valley in this bill, and I'd just like to thank you for that so that everything works.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Saxhog. Deems. Appreciate that.
Would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 1291? Seeing none, is there any further discussion? Senator Schmidt then moves that Senate File 1291 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Saxhog.
Mr. Chair, that be referred to the floor.
It's being done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Senate File 523, Senator Champion.
Good
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. May I proceed, Mr. Chair?
Yes, you may, Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair and committee, as you as we have increased the number of crimes and criminal penalties in our state over the last several decades, the number of Minnesotans throughout the state that have some type of a criminal record has reached an estimated 1 million, or one in five. Minnesota has the eighth highest percentage in the nation of its citizens incarcerated or currently on some type of supervision. With new and much easier access to the records and increased use of them by employers, many Minnesotans are turned away from employment for which they are qualified, even if their record is unrelated from long ago or even inaccurate, often just based on their answer to sometimes a confusing question about criminal records on the initial employment application. Removing the question about criminal records from employment applications and requiring that it is not asked until applicants are selected for an interview allows Minnesotans to be evaluated based initially upon all of their skills and qualifications, not just their past. The cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and Ramsey and Hennepin counties removed criminal records questions from their applications over 6 years ago. Minneapolis waits until an offer of employment has been made. In 2009, Governor Pawlenty signed legislation to make Minnesota one of the first states to require all public employers to wait until applicants are chosen for an interview to ask applicants about their criminal background. Many states have followed our lead, and many jurisdictions have or are considering extending this practice to private employers. Elected officials in Minnesota and St. Paul are in the process of considering applying this practice to vendors and contractors. Senate File 523 will require all employers, in Minnesota, with some appropriate exceptions, to wait until selecting applicants for an interview before asking about criminal records. Employers will still be able to conduct background checks as soon as they select the applicants that will be interviewed. Passage of this legislation will continue Minnesota's record of leadership on these issues and provide for a uniform statewide policy. Employers will benefit by opening the initial step of their hiring process to a larger, potentially more qualified and diverse pool of applicants and determining if their past is relevant to their current qualifications as an employee. They would be less likely to miss applicants who have skills, qualifications, and character needed for the job. Workers will benefit by being evaluated on their skills and qualifications for the job, not just their past. Those who have offended will then have greater opportunity to become responsible and taxpaying community members. Minnesota will benefit by developing a workforce that is employed to its full potential both now and into the future, when the demand for trained and skilled employees will increase. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to have Mr. Mark Hasse from Council on Crime and Justice to go through the provisions of the bill.
Wonderful. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Mark Hasse. I'm the Vice President of the Council on Crime and Justice, a Minneapolis-based community organization. I'm also co-chair of the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition. As Senator Champion said, I'm going to run through the provisions of the bill here. The first section is simply another area of statute that needed conforming language, so I'd like to just skip over that. Section 2, I want to point out, is a law that was passed into effect in 2009, and it limits the liability employers may have for hiring somebody with a criminal record. We actually now in Minnesota have one of the strongest employer liability protections around this issue in the country. And we did add a line at 2.2 that clarifies that if an employer were to be sued just based on the fact they didn't ask at the initial application, evidence of that fact would not be admissible. Section 3 is where the provision that was passed into law into 2009 by Governor Pawlenty applies the ban the box portion of this Chapter 364 to private employers. So as Senator Champion already said, this is the key section that would that states an employer may not inquire into or consider the criminal record or criminal history of an applicant until they've been selected for an interview by the employer, or if there's not an interview, before a conditional offer of employment has been made. That provision was made in response to some testimony by temporary employment providers. If they do day labor, and if they want to call somebody up and say you have the job, they may not do an interview. So once they say the person has the job, they'll say, and we're going to do a criminal background check on you. If there's any problems, you may not get the job. So that just allows that. I also wanted to point out at 2.14, this is an important, we've gotten many questions about this. This states, this section does not prohibit an employer from notifying applicants that law or the employer's policy will disqualify an individual with a particular criminal history background from employment in particular positions. In other words, an employer may be, they can put on their application, that if somebody has fraud or theft-related background, they may not be eligible for the employment. Or they could simply say, depending on the position, the criminal background may disqualify you for employment. The Section 4 is dealing with remedies, and it's important to note that this has been changed by amendment. And originally, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce was opposed to this legislation, and they were especially opposed to some remedies we had in the bill previously that allowed for attorney's fees and injunctive relief. And I want to thank the Chamber and their staff for working closely with all of us and finding some language here that allows the Chamber to not oppose the bill. And this provides a administrative fine provision. It allows employers to get into compliance up until January 1st. The legislation goes into effect not until January 1st of 2014, and this penalty provision allows for the first year for the Commissioner of Human Rights, who's also here today, to issue a warning. And then if the employer is not in compliance after 30 days, then they can the commissioner can impose a $500 fine. Up to a $500 fine. We also made a provision for larger and smaller employers. If an employer has 21 or less employees, the maximum fine would be $500 per month. And if they're a larger employer, the maximum fine would be $2,000 in a calendar month. And then the final section is already an existing law that there are many exceptions. If an employer is hiring somebody to work with vulnerable populations and human services licensed employment, if there's some other statute that requires them to do a background check, if they choose, they can still ask on the application. I think that's the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hazy, for your testimony. And do you know, Senator Champion, this bill was heard in Judiciary, and they acted favorably on the penalty provisions?
Mr. Chair and committee, yes. In fact, they had initially laid it over so that we could work with the chamber and the other testifier, Mr. Ross.
Pletsum,
so that we could make sure that we incorporated their concerns, and we did so, and that's when that particular committee or Judiciary made a motion to bring it back and to adopt those changes, and they wanted to make sure they adopted those changes before sending this bill to you all, and that's what happened.
Thank you
very much. And just for the record, because I'm not sure if Mr. Gerber's here, but he wanted me to be clear in acknowledging, if Mr. Benjamin Gerber is here now,
okay,
that the chamber does not oppose it and that they're neutral on this particular bill.
Okay. But thank you for that clarification, and thank you, too, for working with those interested parties. Commissioner, would you like to comment on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, committee. I think this is a very important issue. Having been in private practice representing employers for over 20 years before becoming a commissioner, having experience working with the county attorney's office, I can tell you firsthand that this has a significant impact on providing individuals with employment opportunities. The U.S. Attorney General to the United States Senate, in a report as it relates to criminal background checks, indicated that 92 million Americans had either an arrest or a criminal conviction in their past. So in essence, one in four, one in five individuals in America if you conducted a criminal background check, you would pull up information that they'd either been arrested or convicted in the past. That's significant. The information, when a police officer uploads that information into the FBI database, is not checked by those police officers after the conclusion of that particular arrest. So let's play this out. To the extent that somebody gets arrested on Friday, the police officer is going to convey that information to the county attorney who is taking on the prosecution of the matter. But as that case proceeds through adjudication or dismissal by the county attorney, the police officer is not going to circle back and then upload that information into the FBI database. And what has happened over the course is that the U.S. attorney, in analyzing this phenomenon, has found that more than half of the information which is in the FBI database concerning arrests has no final conclusion as relates to what happened with that arrest. So there can be a significant millions, literally, of individuals who have been arrested and either exonerated or acquitted, or it didn't even go to trial, and then they are blacklisted from an opportunity for employment. So this is significant, and especially when you compound the fact that 10,000 Americans every day are turning 65 and are therefore leaving the workforce. And then there's also a racial component to it as it relates to the disproportionate number of arrests for individuals who are African American and Latinos, and the challenges that we have as a major metropolitan area, having the greatest disparity between white and black unemployment by the Economic Policy Institute over a year ago. So I appreciate the opportunity to answer any questions that you have concerning this. It is an important issue. It has significant impacts as it relates to providing individuals with job opportunities to become employed.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Commissioner.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Champion.
Acknowledge and ask that you see that we also got letters of support from the Office of the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, Mike Freeman. You should see a letter in your packet, as well as a letter from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and that letter is of support as well. That should be in your packet. So I just wanted to call those two things to your attention.
Thank you. Members, you should have those letters included in your packet. Any questions for Senator Champion or for the witnesses? Would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 523?
May I comment, Mr. Chair?
Yes, you must.
There were
Mr.
many individuals who are interested in testifying on this. We tried to take account that we're up on deadlines here, and so we had minimal testimony. But there are many, many groups, those cited, and the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition includes over 50 organizations and agencies throughout Minnesota.
Mr. Hazy, thank you. And I know this was kind of short notice. This meeting was kind of thrown together, but I appreciate your comments. Any further discussion on this Senate file? If not, Senator Weber, yep.
I would just simply state that I recognize that the chamber's position is neutral at this point, but I do think we would be remiss if we didn't take in and have some discussion regarding the fact that delaying some of this information finding to this point in the process does provide some hardship, and regards the fact that recruitment is an expensive process, and there are some positions that for whom convictions of felonies are going to be an automatic a problem, and I think it is unfair to that particular business to have to wait until that point in time in the hiring process to find out that piece of information. And so I just want that to be on the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Weber. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, if I could address that. Nothing would prevent an employer from informing applicants that they would be subject to exclusion from hiring if they have committed a crime. So they would be able to convey that information to the applicant. The applicant can then select themselves out. And to the extent that they are conducting a criminal background check, they would still have to comply with the Title VII requirements as relates to sensitive information such as a fair credit report. So all that is happening is just taking the question off of the initial application and then tying it to the same process by which the employer would be conducting a fair credit report.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Senator Champion, can I suggest that we maybe lay this bill on the table temporarily? I think there's a few members that are in the tax committee that would like to vote on this. We can bring it right back up after my workers' comp bill. Is that okay with you, Senator Champion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then Senator Schmidt moves that we lay Senate File 523 on the table. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Champion.
Up next on the agenda, we have Senate File 1234, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 1234. Today, I have with me the Commissioner Peterson. What you have in front of you is the approved parts of the Work Comp Advisory Council that are included inside Senate File 1234. And I think the best thing to do for me, Mr. Chair and members, is just to turn it over to the Commissioner to talk about what's included in this workers' comp bill.
Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ken Peterson. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for having me here today. What we have is, because workers' comp is such a contentious subject, what we've done, what the legislature has done, is had set up the Workers' Comp Advisory Committee composed of five members from labor and five members from management, and with the permanent members always being the head of the Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the head of the AFL-CIO. There are also four members from the legislature, which Senator Sparks is one. But anyway, they've approved this bill that we have before you, and so I'll quickly go through it, but they have approved it, and they think it's ready to go ahead. We're still working on some other issues. I'm not sure we'll reach agreement on that, but we certainly have this bill, which all sides have agreed to already. The first one is Section 1, and that is when we under the present law, when a department receives complaints about the conduct of a qualified rehabilitation consultant, we have to investigate it, which in some ways seems like makes sense. However, the problem has been it's been turned into a weapon by some of the QRCs to simply harass other competitors, to make complaints about the competitors, so we spend a lot. The competitors have to spend a lot of time responding to the complaints. So what we'd like to do is just put this at the discretion of the department to look at it, look at the complaint, and then determine whether or not to proceed with it. So that way, we had one person who filed like 50 complaints in a matter of 2 months, and so it's not working. And so if we could have some discretion looking at these things, we'd go at the people that really deserve problems. The second one is administrative conferences. What administrative conferences are just conferences, kind of pre-trial conferences held before a hearing with an effort to try to work out the solutions. It's a little more than a mediation because you can make a decisions are made in administrative conferences, however they can be appealed. And what we're asking for here is the ability to go above $7,500 for medical costs when the insurer says the costs are excessive. What this will do is just make the system be a lot more efficient, so you won't have to take it to a hearing. And people get a decision and be able to move ahead. The third section, three, results from a recent judicial decision involving the Special Compensation Fund. The Special Compensation Fund assesses all employers to pay into the fund, and then it pays for the uninsured people, or when their employers are uninsured, but also pays on behalf of employees who are unable to get paid any other way. What happened in this case is Home Insurance Company, a New Hampshire insurance company, went bankrupt a number of years ago. What Home did was MIGA, the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association, paid off their debts. But then, because of the way the law is written, Home was able to get reimbursed again. So basically, the Minnesota employers were paying for, were transferring money to a New Hampshire insurance company. We took this to court, and we lost both the district court level and the court of appeals. I mean, I certainly can understand why the court made this decision. However, we'd like to change that so we can't do it in the future. Home insurance company would be protected, and there is some language which will be amended to this bill later on that Council Fuller has put together, and we're certainly in agreement with that. And that will cover any other insurers who are also out there right now. The fourth thing is Minnesota law, Section 4, Minnesota law currently prohibits state agents from collecting, storing, or sharing data about individuals that contains genetic information. The problem is we have files going back 50 or 60 years with 1.9 million files. A number of them have entries in there from doctors saying this individual has a history, a family heart history, or a history of heart problems, or an injured worker says, my uncle had a bad knee too, just like I do, or something like that. We would have to go through that 1.9 million files to remove all that. What the files aren't open to the public. They're only open to the parties, to the injured worker, to the employer, to their lawyers and the insurance company to look at, and the department. So we think we'd like to be exempted from that. We're concerned that someone brings a lawsuit requiring us to go back and would have to come in and ask for 200 or 300 more employees just to go through it all and to excise them. So we think it's a reasonable request, and we don't think that anybody's genetic information is really at risk. It's not like real detailed information, but it's more like entries, like I said, family heart history, family history of bad backs, that sort of thing. Number five is when the special section number five, the special compensation fund assumes responsibility for paying a claim for an uninsured employer or for an employee against an uninsured employer, what we do is contact the employer, or when we're getting close to a settlement, we contact the employer and say, we're going to get a settlement. Do you have an objection? We'd like to make that, to limit that time for the objection to 15 days. So they come in, make their objection, but not to come back a year later and claim that, make a claim that there shouldn't have been a settlement on it. So we think that's a reasonable thing to go ahead for the, just leaves the fund out there too long. And it exposes the fund. And when it exposes the fund, they're basically exposing all the employers in the state to spending more money than they should have. And section number six is an interesting one. For some reason, well, we're required to evaluate whether insurers and employers are providing the department evidence of payment of compensation. We're supposed, under the law, we're supposed to use a methodology related to Six Sigma. Six Sigma is a good methodology. Nothing wrong with it. We'd like to use other ones, too, that may also apply to be more. Six Sigma was originally set up for manufacturing, not for going through five, for workers' comp files. We just like a little more leeway in that. We may use Six Sigma, may use other ones. And the Section 7 is at the request of the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. When there's a settlement, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals gets a case from the Office of Administrative Hearings. They appeal from the Office of Administrative Hearings to the Workers' Comp Court of Appeals. Under present law, if there's a settlement before the Workers' Comp Court of Appeals makes a decision on it, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals has to make the decision. What we'd like to do, during that period between the Office of Administrative Hearings and the Court of Appeals, we'd like there is a settlement to be approved by the original judge, because she or he knows a lot more about the case than the appellate judges would. We think that's a very commonsensical thing. The seven issues were approved by all the members. We had quite a bit of discussion on it, and some changes were made, and we think it works. We don't think any of my real majors is going to affect rates, except on the, we think it'll save a little bit of money in the margins for Minnesota employers and make the system a little more efficient. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Senator Sparks, I understand you have an author's amendment this morning.
Mr. Chair and members, we do have, the Commissioner alluded to it. I think it's the A2 amendment that Council has put together. All right.
Yes, Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, and certainly Mr. Fuller can go into more detail, but what this does is just ensure that we make the payments due home insurance company and any other insurer that's out there, but home is the only one, I can tell you that, that we make all of our payments owed to home, and that's basically what we're doing.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Peterson. If there's no discussion, Senator Sparks offers and moves the A2 amendments. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on the Senate file, 1234? Any questions from the committee? Any additional testimony in the audience?
Mr. Chair and members, I just want to say that I want to thank the commissioner and obviously the Work Compensation Advisory Council. I mean, these issues in the past have been pretty divisive, but I think that that advisory council does a lot of hard work and a lot of heavy lifting, and it really makes our job as legislators much easier when they bring the recommendations to us. And obviously, that bill before us is a work of that, so I can't take a lot of credit for this. But again, I think that that council does a lot of really good things and would ask for member support. So if there's no other discussion, I would move that Senate file 1234 as amended be recommended to pass.
Senator Sparks recommends or moves that Senate file 1234 be recommended to pass. If there's no additional discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no, and the motion prevails. Senate file 1234 will be sent to the House or the Senate floor. All right. Next up, we have Senate file 899. Is Senator Bonoff? Yeah, she's not at the table. She's on her way in, I believe.
Sure. Members, why don't we let's recess until 10 o'clock. Senator Bonoff is testifying in the tax committee right now. So if people want to get a cup of coffee or something. So we'll just recess until 10 o'clock.